unceded airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. When the young woman or when the young man, sometimes you got to take a stand. Just because you think you can, you got to run, you got to run. When the young woman or when the young man, sometimes you got to take a stand. Just because you think you can, you got to run, you got to run, run. Crying against the odds, you're in a trance. Say, who did you think you are to have a chance? You're a no one. Broadcast every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Tansay, Madison Singh Sigasayan. My name is Madison Singh, and I'm Cree from the Mixu Cree First Nation on my mom's side, and on my dad's side, I'm Punjabi. I'm originally from Northern Alberta Treaty 8 Territory, and I've been living here on unceded Coast Salish Territory for about 2 years now, and I'm very grateful to be here as an uninvited guest.
Vanguizi, Autumn Schnell Vilji, Chieftain Kui, Janet Kui, Shea Deji. My name is Autumn Schnell. I am Treaty 11 Gwich'in from I'm Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Inuvialuit from Treaty 11 territory. But I was born and raised in Amaskwatu of Skagen, and that is traditional lands of the Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto peoples. And I acknowledge that I was an uninvited guest there for the first 17 years of my life. But now I live here on unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh lands, and I'm really grateful to be here. I've been here for my entire first year. So we want to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and Narad Electric. And you're listening to Season 3, Episode 26 of Unceded Airwaves. Today, we're going to be talking about Indian aunties dating advice with extra special guests Sam Nock and Emily Riddle. So, Sam, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm Sam. I'm from Cree Métis from Treaty 8 Territory, northeastern BC. But my family originally comes from Alacross or Sagittawaka, northeastern Saskatchewan.
Lovely. Do you want to introduce yourself, Emily?
Yeah, my name is Emily Riddle. I'm Plains Cree from the Alexander First Nation and Treaty 6. I lived here on Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh Territory for 3 years, and I'm calling you from the Capilano Reserve of the Squamish Nation.
Beautiful. So, but before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day. So we are the Indigenous Radio Collective. Every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Unceded Airwaves is our opportunity to share and define the diversity of our cultures and highlight some influential Indigenous people.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media. We got Facebook and Twitter. If you have a voice or decolonization, we want to hear from you.
You can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on air. And if we play a song you send us, we'll even give you a shout out.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to, so let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show.
No. Ojo Odenabe. Shke Majamego Snitijnikaz. It's been a long time. Oa Odenabe. Oa Odenabe. It's this way. I can feel my lateral line drawing forward. Let me taste you. Oh, that feels good on my gills. My Kobode told her daughter about that feeling. My great-grandmother told her daughter. My Kukum told her daughter. And my Dodong told me. It was better than they said. I've never felt like this. This is the perfect place. It's easy here. Oa Odenabe, 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 Odenabe. Bubbling, beating, birthing, breathing, bubbling. 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 Beating, birthing, breathing. Oa Odenabe, I never thought we'd meet. Careful with me, Odenabe, I'm not strong like those old ones. They fasted and swam up here every year. This is my first time. Wewene Odenabe, wewene. There are more coming from Chinabish. They're waiting at the mouth. Chinabish. Sagateachewan, Pimadashkodeyon, Odenabe, Gichigiming, Atikmik Sagiganin, Asin Sagigan. Asin Sagigan, Atikmik Sagiganin, Gichigiming, Odenabe, Pimadashkodeyon, Sagateachewan, Chinabish. You're quicker than I thought. Is Zizhak still here? I hope Zizhak. The old one told me about Zizhak. Land of Zizhak and Megaze, she said.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. The time is currently 2:21 p.m., and we have some extra special guests in-house. We have Sam Nock here, and we have Emily Riddle, who is called in. So this episode is entirely about dating advice, but it could be dating in many terms. So it could be, like, platonic intimacy, and it could be, like, hookup tips. And the first one that we're going to start with is a stance on hickey. So how do you feel about hickey, Sam?
I feel like they had a time and place when you're like 14. But now maybe it's not so cool to go into work with a big hickey on your neck.
We talked about Sam's Instagram bio being hickey hater.
Yeah, that was a little preamble before we were on air. Was that it's gonna be my new Insta handle? Is gonna be hickey hater. I didn't know I hated hickeys until about 30 seconds ago when I really thought about it.
What about you, yeah, Emily?
I think. Well, you're asking me to take a hard stance. I think I would be anti hickey, especially anti non-consensual hickey where you don't know that's gonna happen.
In yeah. The next
years. Okay, but what if it's a hickey somewhere that you can't see?
I guess it's a little different. Because I have an office job, but I can't go into work. Like, I have to change my outfit if I'm going to have a huge hickey on my neck.
But yeah, I teach kids.
Okay, but not on your neck.
They also hurt.
That's like, true.
No.
No. Okay, so this one was, I'm not going to say anybody's names, except I'm going to say this person's name. Dave Gertner is going to have a baby. Congratulations, Dave. Do you guys know Dave Gertner?
Yeah, congrats, Dave.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's awesome.
Yeah, he has two kids. Sorry. No? Okay, cool.
Oh, go ahead.
He has two kids, and a third one is due in 5 weeks, and he's wondering what he said they probably have one date left before the baby is due, and he wants to know what his date should be.
Lamaze class? I don't know.
This is very different than my life.
Yeah.
Three kids, but I think they're like, you have to do something without the kids, and
oh, yeah.
I think like a fancy meal would be my...
But should he make the meal, or should they go for a meal?
They should go for a meal.
Someone else has to make the meal. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like a fancy meal, no kids, and like, yeah.
But where? Where are your suggestions?
Oh.
My go-to is Burgoo.
Yeah.
Because it's a nice atmosphere, casual food, still feels a little fancy, and it's like decently priced. Mm-hmm. So.
Reasonable.
For the budget. Yeah.
Free ad for Burgoo.
Yeah. Emily, where do you think?
Burgoo's really good. I don't know. I don't go for fancy food. I eat at home a lot. I'm trying to think. I mean, you and I go to Nuba a lot.
Yeah, I was going
to
say Nuba.
Nuba, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And then, so friendship breakups, how do you deal with them? And what calls for a friendship breakup? Emily, do you want to start with this one?
What calls for a friendship breakup?
Yeah.
I'm trying to recall my other friendship breakups. I feel like I don't have very many friends that I have fundamental differences with in terms of values and politics. So that often calls for a friendship breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. How do I deal with them?
Yeah.
I think friendship breakups are a lot more upsetting than intimate relationship breakups for me.
I agree with that. And I think friendship breakups happen for the same reason you have romantic breakups, where your needs aren't being met in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they're that different, but I do think they are way more heartbreaking because, I don't know, maybe this is just like looking too far into my relationship building and I'm really outing myself right now, but I feel like romantic relationships just have like a ticking clock that there is going to be an end. Date me, I'm single, guys. Whereas platonic relationships, there isn't that like looming thing where like, oh, is there going to be a breakup? And then when you have to do the friend breakup because your needs aren't being met in specific ways and it could be different for different contexts,
mm-hmm.
It's way more sad. / friends are
That's
better
really
than dating.
That's really true.
Yeah. I agree.
Like, there's very few romantic relationships that I'm in where I'm like, this is going to be forever. Like, maybe once in my life I've ever felt like that. But for friends, like, I'm not like, oh, I see this ending. So that makes sense.
I've never had that. For my romantic relationships, I'm always like, this is going to end. We should have just been friends.
True.
Yeah, relatable.
And then what about bad roommates? We've all had them. How do you deal?
I've had the same roommate for 6 years.
Lucky.
I live alone, right? I've lived alone for 3 years, so like I'm my own bad roommate.
Yeah.
That's my own relationship to contend with.
I used to have, before I moved in with my current roommate, I had some roommates that, they weren't bad people. They're just like, we're very different. They're just like such party girls. And I was like going through one of my many existential crises I had during university. And my way of dealing with it was not leaving my room to the point where My mom bought me this pasta maker that you just have to put boiled water in to make pasta. And you just, like, let it sit, and I would, like, drain it out my window. This is in Marine Drive dorms, by the way. And just, like, make my food in my room, my sad
okay,
pasta.
Okay, but, like, was the pasta good?
No.
Oh.
No. Like, al dente, not even. And I would just eat that in my room, and then when they leave, I would come out of my room and do my dishes.
And then prepare to make pasta again tomorrow.
Yeah, second year is really good for me.
It's like all relationships that if you let things build up and like start to resent the person, then things are going to go badly. Just like be direct about your like minor problems with the dishes or like what someone said to you, and then you can like extinguish the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like
until you like hate who you're living with, which is a super awkward situation to be in.
It is super awkward. Like the roommate I've had now, we've been roommates, like I said, for 6 years, and I think it's worked so well. Because we weren't friends before we moved in. We were randomly assigned roommates at UBC, and then we moved out together. So we were roommates, and then we became really close friends, and we're super open about everything, like the most gross mm-hmm. amount of communication you could ever think of. So I think that that's the reason it works.
Don't you have cats together, too?
We also co-parent cats.
Does anybody ever think you're in a romantic relationship?
Literally everyone.
How do you tackle that?
I don't.
Like, okay.
Like, literally, I don't believe you're not either.
We're not. We're just pure Boston wives. It's just a sexless marriage is what it is.
Classic. Okay, so this one was also from someone who I'm really close with, my brother. He told me I was allowed to tell this story. So we were...
By the way, a good friend of mine, so I will...
Yeah. Yeah. We were... I guess he was in Inuvik a couple of years ago, which, if you don't know, that's on Treaty 11 territory. You could probably also do your research to find that out. I don't have to tell you this. But we were in Inuvik, and that's where we're from. And... like, everybody's our cousin there. We have so many cousins there. Everybody with, like, last name Cooey, Firth, Blake, et cetera, basically every name there, we're related to. And so he told me he was, like, talking to this really cute gal at a bar. And, they like, started making out, I guess. And then when they were done, he was like, and what's your name again? And her last name was Cooey, which is also our last name, which you might find disgusting. But that's if you're not native and you have never been to Inuvik, because everybody that is there we're related to. So it's actually quite common, I'm sure. So how do you deal with your family trees on your land, your territory?
There's a reason I moved to Vancouver. So my three family names are Morin-Bouvier and Lafleur, to which if you go to probably Edmonton going east and north into Saskatchewan is everyone. So I moved here.
Have you had that experience too, Sam, or similar, or known anybody with those experiences? Like, is it common?
I think it's like I think it's pretty common, okay. Especially up where it's like very rural, yeah. Like northern Saskatchewan, where there's like 500 people.
And you're related to like 340 of them.
I'm pretty sure like everyone's just related to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Emily?
I guess it hasn't been a problem for me. I guess I've dated quite a few Cree people from Alberta and Saskatchewan, and we just like hash out who our family is, and it's fine. I don't know.
Beforehand, so you like wrote out the entire map.
I feel like it's just as much of a problem in Vancouver because there's so many Korean Métis people here.
True, actually.
Like, you can't run away from it. So.
That's true. I remember distinctly, like, a few years ago, there was, like, this Métis dude that I was like, oh. And I was like, what are your families? Where are you from? And he's from Saskatchewan, he told me. And I was like, never mind.
I know you're cooking.
I hear there's a Morin in your mix.
But I feel like it's been stigmatized a little bit, because if you look at like the Cree kinship system, or like what we call sweethearts, is nishimos, which means cousin. So you would marry your cross cousin in marriage. So, like, I don't know. That's obviously been a cultural change for us.
Yeah,
but like traditionally.
Yeah.
Huh.
Which traditionally the Europeans were marrying their cousins too. So.
So like, yeah, don't judge us.
Hella marrying their cousins.
I mean, isn't that still happening? Isn't that legal in, like, Texas or something?
I think it's, like, legal here.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it's, like, legal to marry your first cousin or something in Texas?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's been confirmed.
Confirmed.
fact check this.
Fact check through Ben Chung. And then incompatible traumas. Why do we all end up dating white people, and how do we overcome incompatible traumas?
Oh, this is such a light and easy question.
It got progressively heavier.
The biggest question there is on this show right now.
I mean, if I had the answer to this, my life wouldn't be on the trajectory it is.
It's a hard one.
Do you have an answer, Emily?
No, I just make memes about this.
And post them on Instagram and Twitter.
That is the answer.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, and it comes down to, like, not even just dating other Native people. I think just dating anyone whose people have been colonized. There's, like, specific traumas, so mm-hmm. I don't know the answer.
But I think it makes it a lot harder when you, like, bring in, like, status to the mix, because it makes you want to date someone who also has status, so your baby's lineage can be the same as yours, or at least, like, considered the same as yours. So it, like, makes it a lot, you know?
Yeah, it's super, like, explaining that to people who aren't Native is so weird. Like, if I have children with you, my kids can't be a member of my community, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's, people are like, what are you even talking about?
And you're like, listen, I've thought about this since I was 4.
Yeah, that's another layer for sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like, incompatible traumas, and I think it's not so much having incompatible traumas. It's more, I think, when two people who have survived under colonization are dating, they have the same traumas. Mm-hmm. And often or not, we are working through them, especially when we're young. We're, for the most part, I think, firstly beginning to face what that means, kind of really ingrained in us. And so when two people who have lived under, survived under colonization are dating and are entering a romantic relationship, which is super close and intimate, those things tend to surface. And so I think you kind of have two pathways where you're just like, I can't do this. Like, fuck this. I, like, am freaking out. Mm-hmm. Or you trauma bond. And it's, like, this really unhealthy codependence thing. Mm-hmm. So I think we all just start dating white people because we think it's easier. But it's not.
It's not.
It's just a different kind of labor.
Yeah.
It is.
And I think sometimes it's, like, it's easier to put in that labor. But also sometimes it's not.
I think it's hard.
It's hard to say which one's easier.
I don't think one is easier.
I think they can be easier at different times.
Yeah, I look like, oh, this is also not going to help my romantic life.
Don't share this with people who you're romantically interested in.
Oh, Lord. I've dated Indigenous folks, and it's been really terrible, or not really terrible, that's not a good thing to say. That was a slip. It's been really difficult, like, really difficult. And I've dated white people, and that felt like a vacation. Like, you're going to, like, their mom Deborah's house for Thanksgiving dinner, and you're just going to sit there and eat the turkey and just, like, turn off their part of your brain. We're like, oh, sweet Lord, what is happening? Because you're just like, I'm here for your butter and Brussels sprouts, Brenda. Like, just give it to me. And then you kind of go about your merry way, and then there's, like, something happens, something slips, and you're like, shit, this person's really white. Uh-huh. And then it just becomes more exhausting than it was in your previous relationship. So I don't think one's easier. I think you can just kind of delay, refer your payments.
Yeah.
I want both. I want the butter and the Brussels sprouts and the, like, understanding without the trauma, like, complete trauma bonding cloud over the relationship. Mm-hmm. High standards.
Yeah. So many high standards.
God, I just want to date someone who...
I just want basic respect and understanding.
And good Brussels sprouts at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one was another question that was sent in to us. But I know a lot of Indian peeps who have specific perspectives on dating white people. In uni, this person was very against dating white people because they didn't think they would... get it with the, like, fancy little, like, dashes that are squiggly, like, you know, like, get it. But now I'm happily dating a white guy. Interested in your thoughts, experiences, and discussion. What do you think, either of you?
So I have a white dad and a Native mom, so I feel like that definitely influences how I think about gender, and that my, like, understanding of masculinity is, like, an Albertan white dad. Same. My understanding of femininity is like a tiny Cree, bossy Cree woman.
Same. Except without the Cree.
Except for not Cree. I don't know where I was going with that, but I don't have a hard stance about not dating white people, but my friends and I have a pact this year that we're not dating any white men.
No cishet white men.
Yeah, this year, and that is still ongoing, so 2018 is not a thing.
2018, you mean?
2018, no white men.
I'm currently in a relationship with a white lady, which is, it's been pretty good so far. There's no complaints. But I don't know, I think it's really hard when you date specifically white men, because I think there's a lot of, like, toxic masculinity that manifests in that, that, like, can be, like, re-traumatizing, or, like, it can bring me back to certain things.
I've definitely dated my share. Again, I feel like I'm quoting myself. I cannot leave the studio after this. I'm thinking back to, like, my most recent kind of, like, heartbreak. We weren't dating, but it was, like, somebody I had, like, this, like, long-standing crush on, and then, like, told them, and they're like, nah, I don't want to date you right now, slash ever, but you're a really great person, and I have so much to learn from you, which I think is just the most quintessential white dude thing to say, is, like, you're super sick, like, you know so much, you're so smart, but I don't want to date you because I have so much to learn from you, and you're just like, cool.
I
shouldn't be your educator, A, and why does that, like, what does that have to do with dating me? Like, it was such, like, a, okay, like, that makes no sense. Why am I supposed to be here as your platonic friend that you're still going to just mine for emotional labor and knowledge, mostly about Indigenous politics and feminism? And I'm like, cool, so I just get to be, like, the fat Native woman that, like, raises you up to be a good boy to some white girl. Cool.
Yes.
Which is basically sums up any relationship I've had with a white guy.
Yeah.
I kind of feel that, I feel the opposite. I feel like all the relationships I've been in with Native men in particular, they, like, idealize the relationship or idealize me and demand all this extra labor. So I don't know. Like, there's problems both ways. Now a train's going to go by, so I'm going to walk away. I'm outside right now.
My response, 2018. Yeah. Anyways, on the topic of gayness,
great response.
How to pick up ladies. This one was also sent in to us, and I don't know how to do that.
Stare at them for a long time until they get uncomfortable and you become embarrassed, and then never talk to them again. It's really worked for me.
Okay, befriend them, like, really well, and then just stay friends forever and be a useless lesbian.
That's just my dating advice in general.
What about you, Emily? What's your advice?
I'm the worst at asking people out. I feel like most of the people I've dated ask me out. But yeah, just make it super obvious for a really long time until, like, you like me, and I'm like, yep.
Okay, but wait, what about the useless lesbian thing? Even if you're not a lesbian, this counts for anybody who's in, like, a singular gender relationship, but
girl on girl relationship,
the useless lesbian thing where, like, you can do that and, like, make it really obvious that you think, but they're just like, we're best friends, we get to go to, like, Cactus Club and drink sangria on Saturdays because we're best friends. How do you deal
with
that?
Better that way anyway.
It literally, you know what, platonic. Just, like, ride that out. Like, that's gonna be more fulfilling.
Okay. And then this is the last one on queerness before the break, and we have to play some commercials. But how to be queer when your Jiju, which is what I would say, or your cook'em, as you two would say, disagrees with it. I think that one's a hard one. How do you tell
my that? My cook'em's not around. Okay. But, like, my family and everyone, like, doesn't care. I was raised in a hair salon, so there was, like, a lot of queer people around all the time.
I've been thinking a lot about this, and kind of thinking a lot about, like, the coming out culture and how, you know, there's, like, National Coming Out Day, blah, 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 blah. And it's not to erase, like, non-Indigenous folks or whatever, like, experience of coming out, because that can be super traumatic for, I think, every queer person.
Yeah.
But I think if you look within, in, like, Indigenous kinship and the communities, coming out has so much put on it, where like it's not just your cook, I'm not accepting it, it's your entire community, which is your entire lifeline. And so I've been like, so my cook, I'm doesn't know, most of my family doesn't know I'm queer, and so like I'm really quiet about it because like I don't want to kill her. So I don't know what you do.
I don't know either. I know that Inuvik just had their first Pride Parade, which is really cool.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
It's a town of like a little town of 2,000 people, and apparently 100 people attended the Pride Parade, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I feel like most people there aren't, either, like, aren't accepting of queer people or, like, are queer themselves and just don't want to say anything because it's way easier to pretend to be straight and, like, kiss your cousins.
Oh, my goodness, Autumn.
I'm calling my brother out. Oh, about the kissing cousins things, at least. But yeah, I don't know. It just, that one's a big one that I don't know how to tackle. I came up with that question. That was me.
It's a big question.
It is a big question. But yeah, so we're going to take a little break now. I'll play a short little song by Quantum Tangle about being queer. And then we're going to be back. So yeah, enjoy this song.
Cycling is hosting Bike to Shop Days. On June 22nd to June 24th, come out and get advice on the gear and techniques that allow you to easily use your bike for shopping trips. There will be route maps for shopping, celebration stations, which have info, snacks, and free bike tune-ups, discounts at local shops around Metro Vancouver, a passport challenge where participants collect stamps at celebration stations to win prizes, guided rides, and riding to local stores to show support. Check out bikehub.ca for more information.
Member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts in Hastings Sunrise at
Beat Street Records, Bomber Brewing, Community Vintage and Thrift, Community Thrift and Vintage, Pandora's Box Rehearsal Studios, Red Cat Records, and Selectors Records.
Your true friend. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. The time is 2:46 p.m., and we're back with Sam and Emily. We have some questions. So the first one was just sent in to me by someone, and it was, my roommate has been crashing in my bed for the past week, and I'm finding that I have a lot of discomfort around sharing that space. More than having my own personal needs around alone time and being grumpy and being a grumpy hermit. And it got me thinking about platonic versus romantic / sexual relationships. And I'm often less down to be physically close or intimate with platonic friends than romantic partners. This is with my queer dude friends, straight guys, women friends, etc. What's up with that? I think it's a hard one.
I think, like, okay, first of all, your roommate crashing in your bed. So my roommate will crash in my bed too, and I have like no patience for it because I hate sharing my bed so passionately. And this includes like people I'm dating. I just do not like sharing my bed. And so I literally just like will shake her until she wakes up, and I'm just like, get the fuck out. Like, you are being evicted. Go to your own bed that you pay rent for. And then we have a fight and she goes to her own bed. But I think in terms of the closeness with platonic, feeling uncomfortable with platonic relationships over romantic, I think we live in kind of a society in general that doesn't value romantic or platonic relationships as like a legitimate form of relationship. And there's so much emphasis put on romantic relationships that we're not really taught how to be intimate with our platonic friends in a way that we don't see being blurred with romantic. And so things like closeness, like physical closeness, intimacy and vulnerability with platonic friends is expected to a certain extent, but you're also expected to save a portion of that for your romantic relationships. And so I think being physically intimate, not like boning your friends, but like hugging,
like cuddling
and cuddling and like stuff like that, like, I think is, if it's your thing, that's totally cool. But also sometimes physical intimacy isn't your thing. Like, I am not a hugger. I am not like a real touchy person. So I think it's just however you're comfortable kind of expressing that kind of intimacy is totally fine.
Do you have anything else, Emily?
No, I like, that totally makes sense to me. I think you have to tell your roommate to not sleep in your bed.
Yeah, you definitely need to have that conversation.
Get out me bed. Have any of you seen the Vine where it's like, beep, beep, I'm in me mom's car?
No.
Oh, and then the mom's like, get out me car. Okay, so this one's another heavy one, but I think it's kind of funny if you want it to be funny. So are white people who are dom in bed the extended hand of colonialism?
Oh, that's a good one.
I want to say yes. But just because everything's interrelated, especially with...
No, I feel like not, because, like, hopefully if you have an actual dom relationship, like, you're the one that's consenting to it as the sub and ultimately, like, driving things. So I don't really see it as an extension of colonialism because we didn't consent to colonialism. And if you have a dom relationship with someone, then you, like, hopefully consent to that. If not, that's, like, sexual assault and not a sexual healthy sexual relationship.
I don't understand a lot of kink.
Yeah.
And I kind of just, like, nod and smile my way through conversations. And I also feel like you can't have open conversations about it. And I think this is a really great question because I feel like a lot of conversations around kink communities are very, very white.
Yeah.
And they don't look at those power structures in between people of color and white people. And how that can play out in the bedroom. I feel like I'm in, like, a really weird, like, Ask Susan, like, sex advice column right now.
Okay.
So, like...
Like, the real Dan Savage.
The real Sam Savage. I'm going to be sued. I'm going to get a cease and desist order. But what I'm saying is, like, I don't really have the answer for that because, like, I'm my own personal discomforts and thoughts around kink in terms of power dynamics.
Yeah.
Which doesn't say I'm like anti, like, do what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
But it's kind of how I feel about hickeys. But I think there's some real power dynamics that play out. I think rather insidiously.
Yeah.
In
and I think, like, the most important thing is just having a conversation with your partner. and talking about it.
Definitely.
And then maybe it won't be the extended hand of colonialism. It'll just be your thing.
Yeah, I feel like, oh, never mind. I shouldn't say that.
Okay, cool. So this one is my question. How do you deal with Native dudes who tell you that feminism doesn't exist?
Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really. But I told you, Autumn, that I think, like, feminism is a tool that we have, just like anything else. And so, like, for me, all these Native bros have all these skidoos and shit, and they're always like, there's no problem. I'm still traditional when I hunt like this. Like, why can't we have feminism as the same sort of tool?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fair. And then also talking about feminism, but this one's just specifically with women, not with, like, other genders and, like, other sexualities. But many Indian dudes love to claim or claim to love strong women until we actually exercise that strength in a relationship. And then it's run to the hills time. Can you tell the fronters from the heroes and when to give up on the guy that just can't take the heat?
Oh, if I could tell, my life would be very different, too. I think that's really true of, like, of not just men, of lots of people want to date strong women until they are actually faced with the fact that they will disagree with them or hold them to their shit.
I think it's really kind of encapsulated this, like, really, like, neoliberal idea of feminism, whereas there's all these, like, dudes, especially, like, cis straight dudes, are just like, I am a feminist. I want to date a strong woman. But the entire time they're, like, touting this politic, they have no one to ever hold them accountable, and then they're like, I'm gonna date a strong woman because it's gonna look good, and then they do, and then someone's holding them accountable,
yeah,
and they run. And I think in terms of being able to find, like, differentiate between who's fronting and who's real, is just, you can't.
Yeah.
It's hard. And I mean, I think even if there is someone who's fronting, that's like having a meltdown, depending on how invested you are, like, mm-hmm. that could be a really good processing or a really good conversation, because I think especially with Indigenous men, there is a lot of space they haven't had to learn, mm-hmm. especially about their own masculinity and the kind of how that is taken up in colonial power and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, I mean, depending on your level of investment, it could be like a really good conversation. My general level of investment right now in teaching anybody is like, no,
none.
Like, read a book.
Google it.
But I think, yeah, there's no way to tell.
Yeah. Call them out. Mm-hmm. Aside from that,
make vague Twitter postings is my go-to.
The best go-to. And then they say that living well is the best revenge. What really is the best revenge, though? In terms of relationships, I'm assuming.
In terms of breakups?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, because I was trying to think of all my exes and if I've ever sought revenge on them.
That's probably a good thing, Emily.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I'm not friends with them, or a lot of them aren't in my life, but I don't have negative feelings towards any of my exes. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I guess, what is the best revenge? There's no revenge.
Yeah, I would say for me, it would probably be living well, because, like, again, I don't really have many exes, and I don't, like, want to get back at them, but living well is what's going to make you the best person that you could be, and, like, that's just mm-hmm. all that you can strive for. So it's not really a form of revenge, it's just a form of self-care.
Okay.
Sam, what do you have to say?
Ooh.
Okay.
I have a mature answer and also my petty answer.
We're ready for both.
Like, no revenge is the best revenge. Doing well, like, taking care of yourself and kind of, like, living your best life is, I think, the ultimate form of revenge on an ex who slighted you. My own personal petty revenge comes in being a writer, where I feel like all my shitty experiences I've had romantically have really fueled a lot of poems and a lot of articles. And I'm just, like, every time I write one and I'm, like, thinking about a specific experience, I'm thinking about that person, and I publish it, I'm just like, ha. How do you like me now? Probably not at all. And any warmness you had for me just died.
So Sam's answer, get published.
Get published is the best revenge.
So we have only 4 minutes left.
Oh my goodness.
I know, not enough time. I think this does need to be a regular thing. Mm-hmm. Except maybe we can include other people too, so Sam and Emily don't have to expose themselves all the time.
We're going to run out of things to expose.
He's going to get, like, completely ruthless, like, as Native women do. So we're wondering your thoughts on self-love. What is the Okay, we think the Cree version of self-love is different from the mainstream idea of self-love, which is the idea that if you love yourself, you should be happy alone. And if you aren't happy alone, you must not love yourself enough. That wanting companionship or partners before being happy on your own is a misstep. But our self-love, like with our self-care, has a lot to do with loving and caring for other people, romantic or otherwise. Mm-hmm. What do you think about self-love, and how do you reconcile this kind of assumption with a different lived reality?
I always think about this question, like, every time I watch Drag Race, RuPaul's Drag Race, I think about, because she says at the end, like, if you don't love yourself, how the hell is someone else going to? And I always think that's so false, because we're constituted by everyone else in our lives and in these sort of, like, webs of kinship. So I think there's always people, if you're, like, within a Cree community or any sort of Indigenous community, that are going to love you if you don't love yourself, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the sentiment around no one's going to love you if you don't love yourself is so unbelievably false, and ridiculous, because there's never going to be any perfect version of you, and you're always going to be constantly working on yourself, as you should be, because if you ever get comfortable, then, like, you probably still have some shit to work on that you haven't thought of. And I think every step of the way, no matter how much you don't love yourself, you're still very deserving of love.
Yeah.
And I also think, kind of going back to that question where I was talking about, like, being alone and how that's, like, seen as, like, a bad thing, it's actually a great thing.
Yeah.
I've, like, very much not dated in a long time, and it used to bother me, but now I'm, like, so stoked on being single that, like, again, I'm never going to date again after this.
Don't send them the episode.
Yeah, there we go. Just really strategically. But I'm, like, very stoked on being single and, like, not being in a monogamous relationship and kind of just, like, letting things go and just, like, really falling in love with my friends. Mm-hmm. And it's been, like, really the most ultimate form of self-love for me.
Yeah. And also, like, mm-hmm. just because you don't love yourself doesn't mean that you can't be taught to love yourself by, like, other, not romantic partners, but, like, other platonic partners. And, like, they can tell you things that they love about you, and that's great. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why it's really important to, like, take time after a breakup, especially if it was, like, an extended relationship, because you have to relearn, like, who you are. Yeah. But also, if you don't do that, that's fine, too.
Also, just, do like, you. Stop dating and just, like, work on your friendships.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So we're out of time now.
20 gay teens.
So we're out of time now, but thanks for tuning in. Thank you to our guests Sam Nock and Emily Riddle for exposing yourselves on air, and taking the time to just talk to us about these things. We would like to thank our sponsors, Narod Electric and Decolonizing Water. The next show that you'll hear is Cue It Up. My name is Autumn Schnell.
My name is Madison Singh.
I'm Ben Chung.
And we're signing out from the last episode of Unseated Airwaves Season 3 on CITR 101.9 FM. This season has covered so much, and we would like to thank UBC FNIS, the Equity and Enhancement Fund, and CITR for allowing my position, the Indigenous Collective Coordinator, to exist, and allowing Unseated Airwaves to exist through my position. We hope to hear you all listening in for Season 4 and for the surprises that it has in store. So thank you all for being here, listening to us, and being such a supportive audience. I'm Autumn Schnell, your host for Season 3, and I'll be seeing you around.